chicken, which was deliberately wafted from that restaurant and filled the whole neighborhood. And he became quite irritated with Colonel Sanders and the entire enterprise. He drew a comic once about how Colonel Sanders was approached by somebody who wanted to put little prayers in each bucket of chicken, but he managed to say, but they would get all greasy, and that would be an affront to the Lord. It's a very funny strip. Now, when you visited Justin, when you came in and looked down the long hallway, you'd give a start, because there at the end of it was a life-size statue of Colonel Sanders wearing a white suit, a white coat, which he had scavenged from somewhere. And although he was angry at Colonel Sanders, he loved the chicken also, which is why there was a love-hate relationship. And once, when it was his birthday, Paul Mavridis and I prepared a special gag for him. Paul made it all. It was a fake bucket that said green fried chicken with a picture of Justin on it. And inside there was fake chicken, fake drumsticks and thighs that were painted green, you know. And when we were going to go out, Paul said, well, I guess so we can have some takeout chicken. And Justin really pricked up. Really? And then when it was handed this bucket, he was utterly, what's this? You know, he can't, this can't be eaten. What is this? You know, he didn't get the gag. But I'm going to go on with this seemingly boring story, because it still has a further development to relate. By the way, this whole story was printed by Brian Doherty in his book about underground comics, a book which completely leaves me out, as they all do. So, years later, this Colonel Sanders franchise was run by a young man who decided, I'm going to make this the best KFC in existence. And he worked with his pals to cook the chicken so precisely that it was actually better than at other examples of the franchise. And I got to know him, and he invited me to come to the back of the KFC where they were smoking dope. Uh-oh. And as I smoked dope with them, I noticed that right next to them was a large poster by Justin Green of chickens cooking and eating Colonel Sanders. Who would have thought that they had that in there? And they didn't know that Justin had lived nearby and had... oh, well, anyway, this extra crispy chicken that is over there at the 24th, you've got to have some kind of cheap chicken in the neighborhood. We used to have a Cajun chicken, supposedly, thing in that building that was burned down in a suspicious real estate fire. What's the name of that? Popeyes, or as some properly call it, Pope Yes, since there is no apostrophe. Yes, yes.
Pope Yes?
Well, it doesn't... there's no apostrophe, so you can't really say Popeyes.
Well, maybe they mean, you know, multiple Popeyes, plural.
Possibly. They,
Popeyes.
But they, you know, they have pictures of Popeye and Bluto and so forth, and olive oil up there. So they clearly mean Popeyes, but they refuse to incorporate the apostrophe into the logo, which is a serious grammatical solecism.
It does not seem to put a dent in their sales, though.
No, unfortunately, but then again, there was the fire and not an ash remains. I think they, the real estate folks just got tired of that big building which had a candy store, a grocery store, apartments, a restaurant, a taco parlor, and, well, I say that with some cynicism, because now they're planning to build condos for the richest of the rich there. And here's something bad that they did that I really hate. All that was left after the building burned down was a big hole, a pit, which is still there, which people were calling Lake Conway, as if Ron Conway had something to do with it, and he probably did. This pit was full of water, and clouds of mosquitoes would rise out of it and infest the neighborhood until frogs appeared, and they were eating the mosquitoes, and you could walk and hear frogs croaking. Did you ever hear them? Well, they had the frogs killed. And so I say, fuck them, you know. Not only is the building gone, they're killing the frogs that are eating the mosquitoes that are trying...
Who had the frogs killed?
Whoever has the plans to... to build tech mansions, condos there, which is going to be the future of that lot. That lot you can see by opening the door of this studio and looking out across the street.
No, I'm not really familiar with all of this. I don't live in the Mission.
Ah, well,
all of these details.
Well, this this stuff about. The real estate fire and Conway and so on is what I hear in the club that is nearby called Radio Habana.
Radio Habana?
Yes. It's down there at Valencia and 22nd, and it's a place where Latin intellectuals hang out. Well, and also, the young cartoonists are often there, drawing, bent over the tables, drawing in what I consider too dark to draw, but... they've got the energy to do it. And right now, they're over at Dermophilia.
Dermophilia?
The tattoo parlor.
Ah.
Because if you can draw something right the first time, you have a future in the tattoo industry. And aside from that, a cartoonist can go whistle for his supper, as it is. Because there's no place, you know, draw a cartoon, so what? AI can do it better, you know, get out of here. But they are... we, I should say, are about to come out with a book of the strips that we have been working on. And there's one that I should get a hold of and finish since I was not there last time. And but I've got to get this 50th Dr. Hal show out of the way. And also Burning Man is looming up. It's going to get me, and I will have to go there and do my show. Mm. And I have to figure out things, because the support structure that used to waft me there effortlessly has dissolved, and I'm going to have to figure out how to get my carcass there. Did you know that I have drawn the cover of the What, Where, When booklet and done interior art for it this year?
I was not aware of that.
I tried to make it look like an old pulp science fiction magazine.
Oh.
Like one of Hugo Gernsback's edited Amazing Stories.
Sure.
You know, I have a huge dome in the desert with the spaceship shooting rays down, and the man is in there, and a growing futuristic city.
But wait. Am I understanding correctly that after... making the cover of their and other illustrations for their What, When, Where guide, you are somehow struggling to get it?
Well, they have nothing to do with getting me there. All they'll do is provide me with free admission and my assistant so we can put on the show.
Oh, okay.
But then, as you know, it's a giant chunk of change to do it, and disruptive, and you know, it takes a lot of work. But yeah.
I've sworn off of it. I don't want.
Oh, I know you have. This is an interesting one. The streets are named after science fiction writers, and it has a science fiction motif.
Oh, okay.
So the pulp magazine thing, I think, was. I'll send you a copy of the way it looks now.
So don't tell me that D is Dick Street. It must be.
I don't know, but you start with Asimov and Bradbury, which shows that their knowledge of science fiction is somewhat traditional and limited.
So they didn't. They don't start out with. I'm sorry. It was Asimov. I'm sorry. No.
Yeah. Who would you start with?
With A's, I'm just thinking it's.
It could be Ackerman, Forrest J. Ackerman Street.
Oh, I mean, he's not a science fiction writer. He's a science fiction collector.
He was an literary agent, including A.E. Van Vogt's agent.
I was
agent.
Just thinking of A.E. Van Vogt, but they don't have a V Street at Burning Man. Not yet. I know they want
to expand. Boy, they'd have to make it really huge. And actually, last time, there were fewer people there, and we all found it very refreshing. Also, these days, more women come than men, and that's nice,
too. Is that
too.
New?
No, that's kind of traditional, but it's become very obvious.
Oh, okay.
And I don't mind that a bit.
Well, that's a nice part of Burning Man. However, not enough to
offset the aggravation of the entire enterprise.
I just want to do other things with my time.
You've given them enough of your blood, sweat, and tears.
I think I may go back to, I'm debating it, go back to Indonesia to join my friend Dr. Paul Kudinari's on another expedition.
Wow, he's out there?
Well, he's not there now, but he will be in August to go up into the highlands of Taraja to photograph the mummies again. I did that with him last year.
Oh, the mummies. Yes, you told me about them.
Yeah. Well, that's a tradition of the Tarajan people, is that they practice what's called second burial. And the actual burial of a Tarajan is a very expensive affair because...
Please remind me what a Tarajan is.
Tarajan is a tribe or ethnic group in Indonesia that lives in the highlands of southern Sulawesi. And they have a syncretistic blend of Christianity and their tribal animistic religion, which involves a very extensive propitiation of their ancestors.
Does it require serious sacrifices?
Yes, it does. Sacrifice buffalo.
That's better than
great numbers. And the buffalo are expensive. They sacrifice these beautiful buffalo.
Too bad that the buffalo have to die, but of course they used to, back in ancient Greece, kill those beef critters for the gods.
That's what they do in Taraja. The buffalo are said to lead the dead through to the afterworld. And so that's the importance of having a lot of buffalo sacrifices, so that you have a large number of buffalo to pull you into the afterworld. And
who would have thought that it took so much effort when dying often seems an easy thing?
The dying might be easy, but the funeral rites are difficult.
Yeah, and the afterlife, you know. Hey, where are the two pennies that they were supposed to put on your eyes? Well, they didn't believe that. Too bad.
Well, it's a lot more.
You can't go down the sticks. Oh, and the obol beneath your tongue. Well, nobody put something between my tongue.
A nice buffalo in Taraja can cost as much as... 20,000, 30,000,
yes.
Even more U.S. dollars.
A buffalo is the symbol of wealth in Asia, and it was in primordial Europe also. It was inscribed on blocks of gold, and from this our word pecuniary, meaning having to do with money, derives from pecos, or cattle.
I did not know.
Well, it's so, and to me, a most interesting side note to that is that in Mesoamerican civilizations, in the Aztecs, Mayas, and Incas, they also had the block of gold with an animal inscribed on it. But this was not cattle. It was a toad.
Toad.
Ever hear that?
Well, I didn't hear that either.
Well, scientists identify this as a certain toad. I believe the scientists are not identifying the right toad.
Oh, you think it's maybe a...
Bufo alvarius.
Oh, my God. You said the B-A word.
Well, nobody's going to care here on the radio. There are only 15 people listen to...
Bufo sylvestris?
Well, that's all very interesting, but it's not a creature which synthesizes DMT in its body.
Might synthesize PCP, the Bufo sylvestris. It secretes a feline tranquilizer from its ear glands. You scratch the cat behind the ears.
Yeah. Well, you scratch the cat behind the ears and also the forehead, but as you know, they rub against you a substance which makes you do what they want you to do.
Through the
vomerosal passages.
Is that right?
Of the feline skull. And
right?
So if you are a cat lady and have a million cats, your will is no longer your own. You're going to be serving and kowtowing to these kitties.
That is true. Son of a gun, we raised big family on the bow.
Jambalaya, the crawfish. really, it's great that everything works for a change. You know, I was quite out of sorts. Then I took my trip to Petrolia and I put up a rerun, which probably played, and there were probably people who hadn't heard it, but it gets the whole sequence of Sinbad's voyages mixed up. I wanted to do 7 in a row and do 7 voyages of Sinbad, you know, but no, they couldn't do that. Even some simple-ass thing like that always gets caught up in deteriorating radio equipment and computer issues. Or so it seems to me. It's a regular party at RV tonight, they say.
If you don't mind my asking, what is RV?
Well, Radio Valencia.
Uh-huh.
Yeah,
I'm
RV.
A little slow on the uptake. I just keep thinking you mean recreational vehicle.
That you are bewildered by it because there's an entire level of pretension that this is radio, that we have to mind our P's and Q's, or the FCC will get us. When the FCC cares nothing for us, we are a computer thing, not radio at all. We can do whatever we want. We can say Trump was eaten by an enraged rhinoceros. I just said it. And the FCC doesn't care. But if you did it on radio, you could have all sorts of fines and
Is it really against the law to say that Trump is being eaten by an enraged rhinoceros or any other type of animal?
At the beginning of James and the Giant Peach by Roald Dahl, the hero, James, is orphaned when his parents are eaten by an enraged rhinoceros, which is why I chose that example, which burst free of its enclosure in the zoo in England.
What do rhinoceroses get angry about anyway?
Probably, in this instance, although the book doesn't go any farther into it, I would suggest that it is the indignity of being a captive. Animals in cages have neurotic behavior because they're prisoners, and what they need is to escape and get out, although, of course, that isn't good for them in the long run either. They just euthanized a bear that was giving people trouble, and a mountain lion attacked somebody or other, and, you know, the critters are getting too angry. Well, we're going to have a guitar session outside. K-Rob just came and took the studio guitar, took it out, and now there's going to be some strumming and singing, which we won't hear because I'm playing this music.
This is a kind of difficult to... You have to be pretty good to play. What is this, again, a Tex-Mex music?
No, it's from New Orleans. It's Cajun music.
Oh, Cajun music.
You know, I went to New Orleans at the beginning of this year. I was visiting my girlfriend there. Then I went on to New York, and I visited my sister there in the winter. Usually I end up traveling in the summer, and what a bummer, because New York City in the summer is a horrible place to be. I went to X-Day, and it was sweaty and sweltery. And did I tell you about the falling cow?
No, you didn't. You've been talking about the sacrifice of bulls and about various insignia bills, about the origins of the word pecuniary from Pecos.
All that is certifiable and true,
but what happens when the bulls fall out of the sky?
Well, I don't believe this was a bull. In fact, it was difficult to tell, but we went to X Day, which was run by the people who do Rubik's Pube, a wonderful band.
Rubik's Pube.
Ever heard of them? They're quite good.
No, I haven't.
Well, they were holding X Day also because they're a subgenius band, and this was at a farm near Allentown, Pennsylvania. And it was in July, of course, because X Day is July 5th, and it was hotter than hell there. But I found myself there to perform the subgenius rites and obsequies and to provide the sermons and the bub. baptism and so on. And I did do all of this stuff. But sometimes you could only stand out in the shade and pant in the shadow of the trees. And while we were doing this, we heard a horrible splintering, crunching sound. And looking over at the old rotting wooden barn... You know, I'll have to apologize to the listeners since I've told this story more than once. We saw the head and forequarters of a cow suddenly stick out through the splintering wall more than one story up. And this was utterly unexpected. And we're all standing there. What do we do? What can we do? The farm dogs knew something abnormal had happened, and all started barking at once. And the farmer came shambling out, and he scratched his head, and he didn't know what to do, and he started inside the barn. But before anything more could happen, the hole widened, and the cow tore through the thing and fell with a huge thud into the paddock underneath. And it was such a crash that we could feel it under our feet, you know, an earth tremor. Pastor Presser, who is the interlocutor on my show, was there, and he felt this vibration of the cow slamming down.
Vibration of the cow?
Of it landing. It fell more than its length.
But wait a second, what was the cow doing on the second or third story of a building?
You know, I never went into that barn. I don't know what it's all about. I don't know why a cow would be up there. Maybe it slid down a ramp and it kept sliding and crashed through the wall, which was all rotting. And another odd thing was the hole sort of closed up after the cow went through it, because all the slats were pushed outward by its body and they sprang back into shape. This barn looks as if it hadn't been painted since 1911 or something. It's all weathered and you know, it's picturesque.
Are you sure there were not some young cartoonists who were drawing a real-time cartoon to baffle
No, this was a subgenius event, but here are the people, and what's happening? You know, are we seeing death on a farm? Are we somehow culpable, obscurely implicated, simply because we happen to be watching this strange thing occur?
But is there not a history of mass hallucinations at X-Day events?
I don't believe so. Arrival of the sex goddesses and the pleasure saucers is supposed to happen. I'm not going to get up at 7 in the morning. I have this big show to do on the 5th, and I will only do it if the exists do not come, if they do not beam me aboard the pleasure saucer. As I have often said, you don't have to go to a landing field or an assembly point. I even did a piece of art you may have seen saying, "We'll come and get you, wherever you are." You know, it shows a spaceman-type guy holding a beautiful woman in his arms as he zooms up toward the saucer. You know, I hope it's going to be something like that. Actually, there are different theories on what it's actually going to be like, and I have contributed to those too, that the pleasure saucers may be these, the pleasure goddesses may be these hideous beings, but you'll have sex with them anyway because of the chemical, the pheromones, the signals that they'll send. You'll hate it, but you'll copulate with these exists. Anyway, that is yet another theory. You know, some think they're going to be a bunch of really bitchin' babes, and so why should I...
Those are the optimists.
Yes, why should I... this is a theological argument. Let's wait until it happens. We'll see who was right and who was wrong. So this cow fell into the paddock, and we were all sort of horrified and thinking...
How many of your listeners know what a paddock is? Maybe you should define...
The paddock, in this case, was an enclosed area behind a rail fence beneath that part of the barn where the cow first emerged looking bewildered and then fell completely through and fell more than its own length to thud into the ground. But the ground was soft. And in fact, while we were wondering, God, does that thing need to be put out of its misery? Does it have a broken pelvis? Suddenly it got up and started placidly walking around. At the same time, the farmer let the other cows out into the paddock, and within 30 seconds we couldn't tell the one that fell from the other ones. And so let's leave it at that. That cow could have had all sorts of injuries, but it was acting as if this was just the normal. And so let's give it the benefit of the doubt, shall we? If it landed in soft, cow-manured, silage-covered, squishy ground, maybe that would help it land, even though it fell a considerable distance. One does not expect to see a cow fall from above.
No, not typically.
Not when you're a stoned sub-genius standing out in the yard because it's so hot, and hearing the sound and viewing the whole thing.
So know. This happens every year that a cow falls out of the sky?
It only happened once, but now they're about to do it again. I saw the announcement from Rubik's Cube. Too late for me to get there.
Maybe this was the first manifestation of a sex goddess. You know, because
I wouldn't object to it, and why not create some new lore connected to what has happened?
Krishna has a whole
Krishna consciousness.
Yes, but Krishna has a whole harem of cow women, I think, and then Hathor.
Good Lord, I never heard that.
Woman, you know, well, they do. They're kind of the cow-eyed. You'd have to get into the Bhagavad Gita.
Right. Well, I wouldn't want to be cowed by such a study, but
don't be cowed.
The Bhagavad Gita is an interesting work, don't you think?
As much as I know it, I think it's interesting. I'm not.
Well, you know, before a huge battle, Lord Arjuna and Krishna are talking. And you do know how it works.
Well, yeah, they're going to go to the battle of Kurukshetra, I believe.
And, right.
And the evil king Duryodhana has usurped the throne of Hastinapura.
Always some problem.
Yeah, well, you know. And then all of the relatives of Arjuna are raid against him, and I believe that it's Krishna's counsel to Lord Arjuna, which comprises the Bhagavad Gita.
Yes.
Yeah, and Krishna counsels him that he has to do the right thing, and that blood ties are of lesser importance to upholding the higher path.
What about that other great Dravidian poem, the Mahabharata? Is that how you say it?
That's called the Mahabharata. It's called the Maha Fried Chicken.
Oh no!
It's the Maha
but I thought
chicken.
They didn't eat the flesh of.
No, they don't. It's a sacrilege. The FCC is going to come and get me.
Well, the most amazing thing about that is that they ride in these strange vehicles called Vimanas, which are aircraft.
The Vimanas go back to the Vedas.
Yes.
Because the Vimanas, the Mahabharata.
Did the ancients
the Mahabharata,
have a
we're
technical
now.
Civilization?
So
of
the Mahabharata is a huge book,
yes.
Of which the Bhagavad Gita is a chapter.
Yes.
And then I thought you were... I'm so out of it. I don't...
No, you know more about it than most people do.
Well, that's not saying much. The Ramayana is what I thought you were talking about. And in the Ramayana, all of the characters ride around on plastic swans. So that's what they do.
What they are?
Yeah, they're plastic swans.
I remember at one instance some princess or other is captured. I'm being very vague here. And in order to ravish her, essentially they put the vessel on automatic pilot, as it is described.
They put the swans on automatic pilot.
So they're swans. Well, that's an interesting translation.
Yeah, that's they have to update the story.
You see, flying saucer cultists early in the last century,
like George von Tassel
and George Adamski, and so.
Oh, yeah.
They would cite this work as showing that there used to be highly advanced tech civilizations on Earth, and that we have fallen into a period of ignorance.
Well, this is true, of course. They knew they were in contact with the Space Brothers. I think that was the Venusians that they particularly were speaking.
Yes, and how strange that these Venusians are always blonde-haired and Aryan and white-skinned with red lips and so forth.
Those are the Venusians.
The
grays, the Zeta Reticuli, yes. Are nowhere near as attractive.
That's right. Those things are, they seem to be an evolutionary offshoot.
And then there's the Nyarlathotepes.
The mighty messengers.
Yeah. So, now, the seven voyages of Sinbad probably could be updated as well to involve...
Updated?
Yeah, they got to update it so that it is going to the seven franchises of... seven franchises of sin. Well, those are the seven deadly sins, but no,
I see.
Yeah, but something, you know, I mean, because
in order to be a successful parody, the reader would have to be familiar enough with the original work, and our version of the Thousand Nights and a Night has been incredibly adulterated, and people believe all sorts of things about it who haven't read it.
So I, you know, my efforts at writing a saga of the Space Cats has largely been a satire of... Oh, I forget his name right now. He wrote the... I can't even say his name. This is a problem with the satire, is that I forget the name of the author. It's just, well, I'm out of it. I really...
but was it... Is he like what we sometimes say, call an occult kook?
Not really. I mean, he's someone who... could translate the Sumerian clay tablets and his...
Well, he's highly educated then.
That's right, and his interpretation of them was to see that they was to interpret them as literal, that they're talking about these different gods coming out of the sky in the Sumerian clay tablets, and this has been thought by other scholars to be somehow metaphorical. And it'll come to me in a moment. He wrote a whole stack of books.
A whole stack.
Yes, he did. And I read all of them. I could go look it up right now, and then it would come back to me. It's always on the tip of my tongue.
And this was a Westerner, a translator?
I think he's from... where is he from? He's from like one of the Turkish kind of countries, like Turkmenistan or something. And I think that he lived in Israel. I'm a bit confused about this. And I'm going to have to look it up because this is driving me nuts. It's just a brain fog. It's seriously a brain fog because I know these books and know what I'm talking about, but I've forgotten the author's name, which is just embarrassing.
Do you have your personal portable device that connects you with the wisdom of the ages? Well, then... that problem is solved. Just get out your Jiffy device, and we will have the answer. Anything in there? You know, K-Rob, we're not doing Relodio tomorrow.
Yeah.
And I, those two
are
bottles
doing,
of...
I
can't. I'll be doing my X-Day thing, Majig, but I've still got those two bottles of banana milk in the refrigerator for you. Please let them in on this.
On Castro and 18th, or near there rather, there's a Molly Stone supermarket, and they have the quart bottles of root beer milk.
Oh my God.
And that's part of their regular...
Who life. Wants to live forever? I'll drink root beer milk and die happy.
But that's part of their, standard lineup as of now.
This is the Rosa Brothers, ladies and gentlemen. They make these drinks, the banana and root beer milk and all the other stuff.
And they have a horchata milk, which I have never tried yet, but...
That sounds interesting.
Yeah, I wish... But there's no way to, order it... without being like a vendor. You know, you can't go to the Rosa Brothers company and say can you send me some horchata milk or whatever? You need to be a vendor, you know, and you need to order cases of the stuff.
They make it kind of hard for you to sample their product. David, did you find the thing that you were looking up on your computer?
Computer. Robo get.
Rollo fix. You've seen Devil Girl from Mars, I assume, right? that
are
movie.
You asking me?
No, I was asking K-Rob, but we are both reminiscing about an absurd robot that's like a refrigerator, you know, moving around and says.
No one loves the Metal Man.
The author's name, so blocking out Zechariah Sitchin.
Zechariah Sitchin?
Yeah.
And he was a Sitchin Stitchin.
Well, I'll be.
He wrote The 12th Planet, The Stairway to Heaven, The War of Gods and Men, The Lost Realms, all of these books describing antediluvian times that were remembered by the Sumerians. And he has
not all of them,
very
but just some of them
well documented.
Yoink.
Critiques of Egyptology.
Check it out. I'm smoking half fatty.
Well, when Herodotus visited Egypt, the pyramids were already there, and it was already ancient and old, even at his time.
I believe so. There's quite a long description in one of these books of how and why the Egyptian Sphinx was a different statue originally. It was recarved.
Confidentially, Sphinx.
Recarved to be the Sphinx. And I think that...
Well, what was it before? There's actually an H.P. Lovecraft story where they go down inside the Sphinx and there are these tunnels and horrible creatures and things.
Then a cow falls.
It's called Imprisoned with the Pharaohs. One of Lovecraft's lesser-known works.
Imprisoned with the Pharaohs. Okay.
I saw a movie which I love.
Imprisoned with the Pharaohs.
Which I'd like to tell you all about. Called The Astounding Adventures of Adele Blanc-Sec. Have you heard of this film?
I've heard of Mel Blanc-Sec.
Are you asking me?
Yes.
The Astounding Adventures of who?
Adele Blanc-Sec.
I'm afraid not.
A beautiful French woman who is involved in occult and esoteric stuff. And she knows a saintly philosopher who can bring the dead back to life. What's your... adjust it any way you want. K-Rob's looking over the submixer. And I'll get out of your way in front of the board if you want to. We're out of balance, you're saying? Life out of balance, Koyana Squatsi.
Rose to supremacy, even extending its rule over Lower Egypt.
Where's that coming from?
The words of the Lord to his prophet Isaiah. For God, that they were only an instrument of the Lord. Oh, Assyria, the whip of mine anger. My wrath is the rod in their hands. Against impious nations I send thee. Upon people who have crossed me I charge thee. But the Assyrian kings went beyond mere punishment.
Ass. They had iron.
It is in its heart to annihilate, wipe out nations, not fear.
The Egyptians only had tempered brass.
This went beyond the intention of the God. Therefore, the Lord Yahweh announced, I shall hold to account the king of Assyria on account of the fruits of the growing haughtiness of his heart.
The fruits.
The biblical prophecies predicting the downfall of Assyria indeed came true. As invaders from the north and east were joined by rebellious Babylonians from the south, Asher, the religious capital, fell in 614 BC, and Nineveh, the royal capital, was captured and sacked 2 years later. The great Assyria was no more. The disintegration of the Assyrian Empire.
Well, that was the Assyrian Empire, but Horemheb, who followed Tutankhamun, was a military sort of pharaoh who managed to defend the borders of the Middle Kingdom. This film is about this woman who, as I say, she at one point she brings all these mummies back, and there a delightful scene ensues where the instead of being monsters, these mummies are all very helpful, and they're from ancient Egypt, and they expected to wake up, and you should hear them speak resonant French with their withered mouths, and also solve the problem that she brings them back to solve. These mummies include Ramses II and his entire court. And when they finish curing her sister of a terrible brain malady, they say, well, we should go out and see what this civilization is like. And they go out and take a look at Paris in about 1911. And they've been in the Louvre. And they say, well, this looks like they do have a fairly good civilization going here. But I think it needs a pyramid.
I think it needs a big pitcher of Kool-Aid.
Well, but the gag is that there is a pyramid. There's a pyramid now.
At the Louvre there is.
Yes, that these mummies were anticipating. Oh, well, I guess you had to be there.
Beware.
It's a wonderful movie. Oh, to watch the astounding adventures of Adèle Blanc-Sec, you must watch it in French because the American version is not worth watching.
You know why Al Jolson went on one knee when he sang?
When he sang Mammy?
Yeah.
He should have gotten down on both knees. But why? Why?
Because his pants were... there was a problem with his pants.
Oh, well.
He dropped to his knees to, like, cover the
well.
Problem.
Well, it worked for him.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I saw a Busby Berkeley movie recently that had a lengthy Al Jolson scene in it where he puts blackface on and he sings about how he's gone to heaven on a mule. And then through special effects, you see him and the mule going over these rainbow bridges and so on,
yeah.
Getting into jazz heaven.
That's right.
You saw this movie?
No, but I...
oh, well, I've got it.
I like the fact that there is a jazz heaven.
Yes. Well, there is in Green Pastures also, another
right.
movie that is objectionable.
See, I wish I had a film farm still to do a Green Pastures screening.
Boy, you
totally
talk about... Chicken getting canceled, they would run you out of town
exactly.
on a rail if you showed
up. I'd open it up with Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs.
The cartoon.
Coal Black
and the Seven Dwarfs.
Exactly.
A cinematic masterpiece, but I don't want to die on that hill.
That was a clamp.
It sure is. The whole idea was, you know, everything that people hate it for now was progressive back then.
Yeah, no, it was hip because you were appropriating culture.
That's right, and...
It was hip if you were appropriating black culture. Like, you were like, oh, hey, that's chic and cool.
It know? Shows that the blacks are Americans. There's this that scene of the American flag. You know, they're the real Americans. They're cooking bacon and eggs and
exactly,
so on. Of course,
yeah.
These are the Seven... dwarfs.
As American as it gets.
They have also murder incorporated, blackout so white. You know, a wonderful dialogue in there. Mirror, mirror on the wall, bring me a prince about 6 feet tall. And then they try to wake up So White, who is black, with a kiss, like at the end of Disney's Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs.
Yeah.
And they kiss and kiss and they can't wake her up. But then finally the equivalent of Dopey from the Disney thing, you know, runs over and, you know, I'll give her a kiss and it won't be a dud. I'll give her a taste of my special I call Rosebud. And when he says Rosebud, the whole screen is filled with the lips and mustache, just like Charles Foster Kane in Citizen Kane. So he tries to kiss, and all these kisses are accompanied by trumpets and cornets and so on. But it's not waking her up. Then finally the little one gives her a kiss, and boing, she springs up with her braids sticking out.
Yeah.
And it, man, what you got that makes so white think you so hot? That is a military secret.
Yeah.
Isn't that the way it ends?
I was scared by a pawnbroker's son.
Well, that's in Porky and Wacky Land, not in Gold Black. No, Clampett was, you know, people can't understand how awful it used to be that some movies were not shown in the South because they didn't want black people on the screen.
Yeah.
And they even made movies, Tarzan-like movies, where white guys in sarongs live in Africa and so on. This
that
was terrible.
They got rid of the guy, there's a black guy in the Star Wars sequel trilogy that they took off of the posters for Chinese audiences because they didn't want a black guy in the Star Wars poster. So they took him out of the... He was in the movie, but they took them off of the poster because they didn't want...
Imagine their surprise when they saw the movie.
Like, hey, this guy's in there. Well, I guess he doesn't really amount to much. I mean, no one does except for, you know, Rey, I guess, in the...
Well, I haven't seen the film.
It's The Force Awakens, The Last Jedi, and The Rise of Skywalker. It's three movies that have a Star Wars logo on them.
Doesn't Luke bow out at some point?
Yeah, in the middle movie, he actually dies.
Good lord.
He dies in the same way that Yoda does.
They killed off Yoda, they killed off Han Solo, they killed off Princess Leia. Or did they kill off Princess Leia?
They killed off Leia,
yeah,
Luke,
they did.
Han Solo, and Yoda. And Yoda's
not to mention Obi-Wan Kenobi. You know, they killed off everybody. They killed off, mother of Darth Vader.
The mother of Darth Vader?
Shmi Skywalker, yes.
Yes, they. She was attended in her labor by robots with scoops for hands. It didn't look like they gave her a very good delivery there. Do you remember that?
No. Robots for hands mother birthing was the mother of Luke and Leia.
Really?
Natalie Portman.
Right. Okay. I'm sorry. I did have it wrong. That was the mother of Luke and Leia. Well, she doesn't survive either with those robots in their scoop hands. But. Okay, remind me, who was the mother of Darth Vader? Because
Shmi Skywalker.
Oh, all right.
She was a slave with her son on Tatooine.
Okay.
And she did not... Oh, she got captured by the Sand People, and she died as a Sand People... Captive, slave, etc. thing. And because she died at the hands of the Sand People, that is when Anakin Skywalker, a.k.a. Darth Vader, went ballistic and decided to murder all of the Sand People in that village.
Uh-huh.
And he's like, I killed every one of them. Like, that was his thing.
Are these Sand People the Tusken Raiders? Or
exactly,
related?
Yeah, they
yes,
are the Tusken
all right.
Raiders.
See, it's been a while. And I'm behind by a number of Star Wars movies.
Yeah, that was the prequel trilogy, but the sequel trilogy had the death of Luke Skywalker, the death of Han Solo, the death of Princess Leia.
I was irritated with the death of Han Solo. It seemed, you know, arbitrary, contrived, a fluke of screenwriting. But, of course, what do I know? I don't have the grand scheme in my mind.
Well, it was for the benefit of the Kylo Ren character.
And I didn't like Kylo Ren one bit, but now I like him because I've seen him be really good in other movies.
Like 65?
At Terry Gilliam's The Man Who Killed Don Quixote.
Oh, there you go, yeah. You ever see White Noise?
I don't think so.
I like him in that. I think that's my... Oh, that one and The Dead Don't Die.
All right.
I've never seen The Marriage Story, which I heard is great. But, yeah. The Dead Don't Die, you ever see that one?
No, intriguing title.
It's a Jim Jarmusch zombie movie.
Oh, what do you know about that? Didn't he also do a vampire show?
About that? Maybe. If you count Night on Earth as a vampire taxi cab movie. You did a vampire movie? Jim Jarmusch?
I thought so, but I haven't seen all of those movies either.
I like Nosferatu. You ever see that one?
The recent one?
The most recent one.
Yes, I did see it.
Yeah, I like that one.
It was extraordinarily well done. So well done that the subject matter escapes the mythopoetic and begins to be repulsive.
Yeah, but it's like, it's so...
But that helps the horror.
It's really engaging cinematically. Like,
yes.
Like, as it rolls along, it's like, it's really great. It like melds you with the movie, and it's like, it's really...
You're there in the early 19th century.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I felt more connected with that movie than a lot of movies I've seen.
Also, they were quite bold to have those two children killed by the vampire.
Oh, I don't remember that part.
Oh, well, these obnoxious brats who are in it, they're not very appealing, but nonetheless, they're children, and children usually don't get killed in a movie. They're the daughter... they're the daughters, yes, the two daughters of some blonde-haired character who is in the picture.
Remember the movie Mimic?
Yes, very well.
That movie had kids as victims.
It's true. They were killed by the giant bugs that live in the subways of New York.
Yeah. I like it when kids get whacked.
Yeah, it's rare that a kid would get wrecked. What about Once Upon a Time in America? Doesn't Henry Fonda shoot a little kid early on in that movie?
Oh, Once Upon a Time in the West.
Oh, okay, yeah. Right, you're right. Once Upon a Time in the West, yes, of course.
Yeah, it's like, I think it's Charles Bronson is the kid who sees his dad get killed. And, like, so the kid is traumatized and wants eventual revenge on Henry Fonda, which he gets in the final moments. But, like, it's... like, the death of his father is for the benefit.
Yes, well, that's the main sequence. But I thought that they... just to show how villainous Henry Fonda is, they had him shoot a kid. But now I'm suddenly not so sure about this.
I think it's like he kills the kid's dad. And he makes a point of, like, making sure the kid knows and... like, that's like his sadism at work, you know. And it's, so when Charles Bronson gets Henry Fonda his comeuppance, he's steel-eyed and resolute, etc.
You know, one I've never seen is The Magnificent Seven, but I saw a clip from it that made me think, well, this looks interesting. After all, it is based on Kurosawa's original movie.
Seven Samurai?
Yeah. Isn't it? I mean, I always heard it was.
Yeah, yeah. I thought there was a... like Star Wars is with the Hidden Fortress. I mean, there's a through line there somewhere. But it's more pastiche-ier than that. Oh, did you hear about Tarantino putting out Kill Bill as a complete film presentation?
No, but that sounds interesting.
He's putting out both Kill Bill 1 and Kill Bill 2, but it's like one giant movie.
Does he chop anything out?
No, he's actually adding more in. So it's like a director's cut, if you will, of the 20-year-old Kill Bill movies. But there's more O-Ren animation, I hear. The anime of the preteen Lucy Liu anime cartoon styling.
Do you want I should play those things?
You want? I should. You should, I want.
That's all right. So what do you suppose is the matter here? I reconnected. It does nothing.
What, you know, connected?
This microphone is a dead dud.
Okay.
So I'm using this one.
Which works.
Yeah, it works, but I have to lean into this uncomfortable position in order to use it. Still, it does work, and that's the important thing.
What about switching the wires?
Switching the wires? Is that permitted? This wire, but it goes through a hole into the unknown...
I'm just meaning that the connecting wires are the actual wires. I don't know how closer you would be to it.
I see. Well, how much of that wire could you pull? And please don't pull it now. It's the only connector to the microphone I'm using.
All right, just for a second.
Oh, Well, that was something.
No, it doesn't have. I mean, it doesn't have any slack or whatever.
There's, yes, that's.
There's no extra.
Yeah, it has to be. You know, I had to turn it several times, or else it wouldn't have come over this far.
I don't know what the board problem is. I mean, you know, I've only come in like maybe once a month now. You know, like to do like any studio time. I didn't come in yesterday. I think I came in maybe 2 weeks ago, and that was the only time I came in the month of June.
Did you ever get feeling that bugs were biting you here?
No.
Because I've seen their big boxes of, I don't see them now, but big boxes of Raid and Bug Killer and so on. Yeah.
So there's like that a defensive posture being taken.
I don't know.
With all of this, like, kind of aerosol poison canisters, you know. Like, why do you have... You ever see them... you know, the last movie I saw in the theater was Ballerina?
I don't know it.
Do you know about this movie? It's Ana de Armas, who played the... she was, like, the pleasure robot from...
Robot.
The Blade Runner sequel.
Uh-huh.
She was in a James Bond movie, which I don't think I ever saw. She played Marilyn Monroe in a movie.
Is that the Marilyn Monroe who goes running off with this kid and into the country or whatever? That looked interesting.
There was a movie, I forget what it was called, like Blonde or something. It was like a one-word title, maybe. But she played Marilyn Monroe. And anyway, she's like an action...
Did you get it?
Yeah.
All right. An action figure?
Like she's like she punches and kicks and kills.
No, for heaven's sakes. No, Marilyn didn't do that. Be exceptionally careful with Miss Monroe. You know how she is.
Some like a dead. So, yeah, like
when
Tony
she chops
you,
they chop.
Jack Lemmon is like... Holy cow, you killed a whole train full of people. Yeah. That's the girl for me. I don't care if she is a murderer. She's hot to trot. Marilyn Monroe is a... Girly girl.
A national treasure.
She is. To this day. So yeah, a woman who recently portrayed her is in this John Wick spinoff. It's the world of John Wick.
I'm going to have to say here that I know about these John Wick movies, but I've never seen them.
I've seen every one, and I've even seen the spinoff movie.
Well, so are you...
So I'm a completist.
All right. And they're fun movies.
Yeah, they're, you know, it's...
A fantasy about killing large numbers of people.
There's some Matrix DNA in there. I think that's kind of the idea, that it's like stylish violence. You know, it's very choreographed and lots of killing. There's just killing and killing, you know, I guess that's what the Rambo movies did. It was just like Rambo would just kill and kill and kill in these scenes, you know.
Yeah.
Sigourney Weaver got the title the Space Rambo for the movie Aliens because she killed all these aliens.
Oh, the Space Rambo? I never heard that.
You never heard that?
No, but of course, Hollywood chit-chat, perhaps.
Well, it was when the James Cameron Alien sequel was made, and Sigourney Weaver was, like, mowing aliens down with her machine guns.
Well, she's back to do it again, or rather, when she finally came back, she was on the side of the aliens now. She had so much alien DNA that she could communicate, snuggle with them in orgiastic heat.
Was that the one with Winona Ryder?
Yes.
Yeah.
The one directed by Paul Jeunet.
Exactly.
And it also... had some of the cast of Delicatessen in it.
Yeah, Dominique Pignon.
Pignon, most definitely.
Ron,
there, in his wheelchair. Ron Perlman, yes, Hellboy. He was there. I like the scenes of the aliens swimming underwater. You know, they're really good swimmers. Undulating through the water-filled part of the spaceship.
Humans are, they haven't acclimated to the water in that fashion. That's why the aliens are so cool. They can acclimate to underwater.
To anything.
Yeah, they're a perfect organism, as Ian Holm stated, I think. Is that his character?
Yes. Ash.